My message this morning is entitled Eyes to See. So, after the Holocaust, the survivors were gathered up and they were sent to through refugee camps. And there were, of course, many orphaned children, and most of them were nearly starved to death. And those in charge of the camps noticed that most of the children, most of them were not able to sleep at night. And after talking with them, it became apparent that after the terror that they had lived through, they feared waking up homeless and hungry. So no matter what they did, though, no matter what they did to help these children understand that they were no longer in danger of not having a place to live or food to eat, nothing at all seemed to give them enough security to sleep through the night. At some point, someone had the idea of giving each child a piece of bread to sleep with at night. And it worked. And a simple, ordinary piece of bread, the children had found hope for tomorrow. And an ordinary piece of bread, extraordinary hope was found. In our Bible story for today, ordinary bread is once again transformed. It's not only transformed, but in the sharing of it, it creates sort of a transformative moment. Two of Jesus' followers were sort of moping down the road to Emmaus, and Jesus joins in with them, but as the text says, their eyes were kept from recognizing Him. They end up inviting Him into their home, and as they gather around a table in the breaking of the bread, they recognize Jesus. It's a transformative moment. It's a moment that moves from ordinary to extraordinary, and it's done with bread. The extraordinary is brought out through the everyday ordinary. In the breaking of that bread, their eyes are opened. They see Jesus, and everything changes. The meal, their lives, even the road that they had moped down the day before had changed. Yesterday, it felt like so sad and cold and hopeless. But when they head back down that road, that same road to Jerusalem, after seeing Jesus, it was alive with new hope and new life. The Presbyterian Church has these lay-led spiritual renewal weekends called the Presbyterian Pilgrimage. It's part of a larger movement that started in the Catholic Church in Mexico called Crucio. And it's basically a long weekend full of short talks about the essentials of faith. The idea is that you come out of that weekend with a sort of renewed faith, transforming your ordinary day-to-day into an extraordinary life, trying to follow the teachings of Jesus. Now, the Methodists got the best name for their version of it. They call it the Walk to Emmaus. You see, Emmaus Road experiences change us. They transform us. So I'd like us to take a little bit of a look at what changes us and then try to apply that knowledge to everyday life. Now, judging by the way many people conduct their lives and by the way some churches conduct their mission trips, it'd be easy to say that to believe that the single best way to get someone's life to change is by the simple act of telling them about Jesus. It's what most people think of when they hear the word evangelism. But you know, today's story has a different tale to tell. In today's story, while Jesus does teach about the Scriptures, he evangelizes. While he does it, that's not when they recognize Jesus. That's not when their eyes are open. That's not when they see that Jesus is there with them. Let's face it. During life's most difficult times, it's easy to feel like God is absent. It's easy to wonder, where is God in all of this mess? Even our great ancestral history have thought, though
getting tongue-tied. Even the greatest of our ancestral history have been there. It's the feeling that led to King David penning the 22nd Psalm, saying, my God, why have you forsaken me? Even Jesus quoted those very words as he hung on the cross. Feeling abandoned by God, or feeling like God is absent, is not a sign of being a bad Christian. It's just a sign of being really human. And in those times, it's hard to see God, even though we may actually understand that God is with us. What doesn't help when we're feeling that way, what doesn't help is having someone tell us that we shouldn't feel that way and start quoting Scripture to try to make us feel better. Even when it comes from a place of good intentions, it just reminds us of the absence that we felt. So the followers of Jesus, they're walking on the road to Emmaus. They feel a bit lost. The body of Jesus has been removed from the tomb. As if losing him on the cross wasn't bad enough. Now they can't even go to the place where the body was laid to rest to remember him, because the body was no longer there. And Jesus himself stands there with them, teaching them, reminding them of what the prophet said, basically evangelizing, and they don't see him. It isn't until he accepts their invitation to join them in their home that the story begins to change. He joins them in community and in fellowship, and that begins, the tide begins to turn to them recognizing him. And he does what to us seems like the simplest, most ordinary thing, but to them must have seemed remarkable. He serves them bread. You see, he was a guest in their home, and the standards of those times dictated that they should serve him. But he turns the tables, serves them, and in doing so turns the tide of them recognizing him. It would seem that even the best evangelism is done, not spoken. The best evangelism is not heard, it is seen. And their eyes were opened. Or as St. Francis of Assisi once put it, preach the gospel and if necessary, use words. It was in serving them that they recognized him. We live in a world where we have grown somewhat afraid to extend ourselves that way. We worry that if they don't return in kind, we'll have been taken advantage of. Or that if they don't deserve it because they maybe haven't tried hard enough. Or that we'll sacrifice whatever and they won't change. But that's sort of a jaded way of looking at the world. As a matter of fact, back in 1968, a senior at Roosevelt High School in Honolulu understood how much better off we would all be if we could learn to stop expecting something in return for being kind. If we could stop worrying about being taken advantage of for extending kindness. If we could stop worrying about what we might lose if we simply loved people and started thinking about what they might gain. He wrote something that he calls the paradoxical commandments. I'd like to share that with you now. People are illogical, unreasonable, and self-centered. Love them anyway. If you do good, people will accuse you of having selfish, ulterior motives. Do good anyway. If you're successful, you will win false friends and true enemies. Succeed anyway. The good you do today will be forgotten tomorrow. Do good anyway. Honesty and frankness makes you vulnerable. Be honest and frank anyway. The biggest men and women with the biggest ideas can be shot down by the smallest men and women with the smallest minds. Think big anyway. People favor underdogs but only follow top dogs. Fight for a few underdogs anyway. What you spend years building may be destroyed overnight. Build it anyway. people really need help, but may attack you if you do help them. Help them anyway. Give the world the best you have, and sometimes you will get your teeth kicked in. Give the world the best you have anyway. You see, it was in serving them that they recognized him. It was not in evangelizing. It wasn't in the words. It was in joining with them, fellowshipping with them, loving them, doing for them that they recognized him. The best evangelism is not heard, it's seen. And as much as you do it unto one of the least of these, so too you do it unto me. Somewhere in the world today, a young woman is living under a bridge who has not eaten in 2 days. Christ is waiting there in her to be recognized. You see, it's in the serving that Christ was recognized. Somewhere in the world today, there is a man who cannot pull himself away from the bottle. He feels forgotten, overwhelmed, and unloved. Christ is waiting there in him to be recognized. Somewhere in the world today, there is a teenager who's done everything right, made good grades, is president of the student body, got accepted to an Ivy League school, but she feels like she's living somebody else's life. Christ is waiting there in her to be recognized. Around the world, every person you meet, no matter how collected they are on the outside, is struggling with something on the inside. Christ is waiting there in each person you meet to be recognized. See, it's in serving that we recognize Christ. Not evangelizing, it's not words, it's joining together, fellowshipping, loving people, doing for them. It is those things that help us recognize Christ. The best evangelism is not heard, it is seen. Frequently, those who do not have eyes to see Christ are looking at the wrong thing. Frequently, those who are wanting others to hear Christ are only using their words when they should be using their actions, when they should be using their lives. But those who have eyes to see, it is in our actions that others see the love of God. It's in our actions towards others that we finally see the love of God in them. That is the life lesson of Jesus. That is the value of the resurrected Christ. That is the reality of God's love. It is much more frequently found in the way we treat each other than it is found in our words. It is much more frequently found in the serving of others than evangelizing them. It is much more frequently found in our day-to-day actions than in our Sunday prayers. Might it hurt us? Might it leave us weary from the task? Might we be fooled and taken advantage of in the process? We might. But share the love of God anyway. Opportunity to share any thoughts you have about our scripture or the message and the themes in the message today. Are there those who have thoughts they'd like to share with the rest of your spiritual community?
Well, let me start since I got the mic. I think your opening comment about the orphans after the war is kind of our counter-narrative, because the typical narrative of World War II is that the forces of good overcame the forces of evil, and everything was great, and everybody went home. And the only people who were home were the Americans, because everybody else's home had been blown apart. So there were millions of displaced persons all over Europe who couldn't go home. It didn't exist. So that's another part of your story.
Are there others who have thoughts they would like to share? If not, then I'd like to give you the opportunity.